A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sheila Shoiga, and welcome to Ready to Be Real Conversations, the podcast series where I chat to people of all walks of life. Some names you'll recognise, others you might not, but my hope is that these conversations will at times inspire, challenge, educate, comfort, or simply entertain you. In this episode, I speak to dancer and choreographer, event organiser and producer, and recently wedding celebrant, the brilliant Bonnie Boo.
I'm a lot more introverted than people realise, because obviously if you only see one side of someone, you know, what I do is very out there, you know. But I think there's a difference between confidence and then being extroverted, you know. And like, I'm really confident and enjoy what I do, but doesn't mean that I want to be that extra all the time. Mm. You know, that's like, you know, I don't walk into a room and want everyone to look at me because I've walked into a room. Like, on stage, that's my place where we've made that agreement that you're watching me now, you know. And I suppose with the wedding ceremonies, you're there for the couple, you're not there for you. So what I mean by that is, it's not about me when I'm marrying someone.
Yeah.
It's about them.
Yeah.
And because it's about them, I think the nervousness is coming from a place of really caring, because I need to make sure that they have a great ceremony.
Mm. Bonnie is a nature lover who lives in Waterford, and in this conversation, she tells us how dance was a big part of her healing journey. She talks about her path to burlesque, being a wedding celebrant, and how she doesn't let a chronic health condition hold her back in life. She's one of a kind, and I was thrilled to connect with her. Bonnie Boo!
Sheila Shoiga!
Bonnie Boo in the house!
How you doing? In the chalk.
I'm so glad you're here. You know, because you're just such a brilliant human being. You're so much fun. And what you're doing, I feel, excuse me, well, I have a frog in my throat. I'll take a little drink.
Rip it.
Mm-hmm.
Go on.
I really feel what you're doing in terms of your work and what you are empowering others to feel in their bodies is really, really important.
My heart. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean that genuinely. So I'm proper excited to talk to you. And because you're a multi-faceted human being and you do a lot of stuff, we can go many different places in
we
this conversation.
We can go to dark places and bright places.
Let's do it all. I'm here for it all.
We're here.
Speaking of dark and fun and all of those things, let's start with your recent performance.
Yes.
On the Vicar Street stage as part of Jenny Keane's first ever sex education show. I was there with my bestie. What a night.
What a night. Honestly, I'm still pumped. I still feel the energy from that night, genuinely.
It was incredible.
Yeah.
And when you came out on stage, the adoration from the audience. I mean, you got a standing ovation. We all went wild for you. Your performance was really quite something. It had everything. For those who weren't there, right, because
I absolutely cried laughing. I felt so empowered. It was incredibly freeing to watch you and had that ripple effect into the audience. But can you try, I know it's hard because you're a performer and it's all about the performance, but can you try and put into words what it was about, what you were trying to do that night?
Yeah. God, where do I start? First of all, I just want to say thanks. A proper thank you for having me here. Absolutely delighted.
So welcome.
Really am. So, you know, I do so many different styles of performances, like from more comedic, more sensual and sexual. And I suppose when it came to Jenny's show, obviously there was a running theme of sex.
Yeah.
And, but you know, when you only have one performance in a show, I'm used to having a few. You kind of want to touch on all of the emotions.
Yeah.
To kind of bring everyone in with you on that stage. You know, so that act for me has the comedic moments, but that real raw in your belly empowerment moments and that real just wild and free with your body. And like that performance particularly has a story behind it as to why I created it. Yeah, I created that act a long time ago. So I'd say five years ago, maybe six max. And it came because, long story short, I was doing a performance for a show. I won't say what it is, but just like a show. And the audience were not great. And I'm being polite by saying that. And a lady in the audience, when I walked off stage, very like in her energy, just went, oh, slut, to me when I came off stage.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was really interesting. I learned a lot throughout the years because I now have bigger boundaries as to what shows I say yes and no to.
Mm.
Not everyone I feel is ready or deserves to have that part of me put out and out there.
Love that.
You know, I really do believe that.
That's an important sentence, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm. And I feel that you can put that in all areas of your life. But I think when when you share such an open and vulnerable part of yourself on stage, especially with burlesque and the nudity and the vulnerability and all of that, you really need to be careful who you're letting in. I can't control it all the time, but when I can, you know, I don't say yes to all shows. A gig is not just a gig for me anymore.
I getcha. You know? I would imagine for with Jenny, because I know you're really good pals and you do a lot of work together. I mean, you collaborate together a lot. That it was a hell yes.
It was the perfect
place.
It's always a hell yes with Jenny. I knew straight away.
Yeah.
I just knew it would be the perfect act to bring in because, you know, and when that woman said that remark to me, I don't know if you remember, but in the act, I said it's all about intention. So pay attention.
Yes.
And watch this slut own it.
Yeah.
And that's because, you know, words are just words. It's the intention behind the words that really create the message and the power of them, you know?
Yeah.
So like, you know, it's like reclaiming words for yourself, as we know lots of people do in different ways. So, like we can say slut in a really fun way, in an endearing way, in class, no problem, slut drop, like let's do a slut drop, you know.
Yeah.
But the woman that night didn't mean it. She could have used another word for me and still had the same impact.
Yes,
so I decided to use that word. And I just want to say thank you to that lady because I've now made a lot of money from that act. Thank you.
But at the time, I would imagine in that moment, because we're not robots, and I know what it's like as well to have criticism and nasty things being said, and there are times and times of the month where I can handle it.
Yeah.
And other times when it penetrates a bit deeper than I'd like it to.
Yeah. I'm probably going a little bit red even here thinking of it now, because at the time I remember just feeling so like upset after the show and real, I didn't feel safe.
Okay.
And feeling safe is really important for me. And, but you learn a lot from that. A lot.
And I know you know this, but it's important as well, I think, to always reiterate the message that when people say kind things about others or unkind things, as the case may be, it's a reflection on them, not on the person they're saying it about.
Big time, because if I was to take that as an insult, I'm like, how can I get insulted by being called a slut? Like, what defines a slut? You know, so it's funny. So it's like, people are projecting when they do that. They don't know me. It's never personal. Like, I can't take it personally if I don't know them personally. So that woman just had her own issues. And I actually don't feel any way towards her, because funny enough, I bumped into this woman for the first time since that show randomly in my gym.
The same woman?
Same woman, I remember. Yeah. And
okay.
It was interesting. We were both just the only two people in the changing rooms. And she definitely shied away from me, which was interesting. But I just sent her love. I genuinely didn't feel a way. You know?
Okay, well done.
It was interesting,
you.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great. It was great.
Rising above.
Yeah, yeah.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah. Good on you.
Thanks.
That's not always easy.
Yeah.
Especially when you're confronted with that.
Yeah, yeah. It was a good
test.
Moment. Look at us opening up the podcast with Mel.
No, I love this because, okay, so that was that moment.
Yeah.
And had you not performed that act then since?
A couple of times, but not much. So I put that away for a few years. So At Jenny's Show was the first time I performed it in over 4 years, I'd say.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and I knew, because obviously COVID happened in between, so that's why it was probably so long.
Yeah.
But I just knew it was the right time to bring that out.
What you know, performance, yeah.
Yeah, I just knew that audience was going to
appreciate it.
And maybe some people didn't even know that it was as deep as that. It doesn't have to be. You know, people take whatever they want from a performance.
No, I think it blew all of us
away. You know?
Thank you. So, yeah, okay.
I felt
so,
the love.
Yeah, good. I'm so glad you did.
Let's talk about
how you got into it in the first place. It's an obvious question, I suppose. How did it all start for you? I know that dance movement is your purpose in life, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely.
Has it always been there?
Yeah, it's always been a part of my life, but it's never been at the forefront as like a career or, you know, like something that I saw myself doing like this. I suppose I've danced since I'm really little. Like, obviously, we've all done the Irish dancing, you know, started off with the good old jigs. And then me and my friend Louise would always do like a kind of hip hop, Shakira style Beyonce dances since we were little.
Deadly.
Yeah, and we were we'd always do like local shows, and then I was in a hip hop crew in breakbeat when I was a teenager, but I always danced with people. So this is the thing: I never saw myself, and I don't even mean this as a negative, like put myself down. I never saw myself as a strong enough performer to be solo. It was always like a hobby and a passion, and with friends.
Okay.
You know. So, but when I look back, I'm just so glad. Like the universe just kept pushing me. True struggles as well to kind of get to this place. But I suppose, you know, I only went professional full time as like a performer, I'd say, I'm really bad now, like 6 years ago, seven years ago.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just always been a hobby and a passion, but never like my money earner, if that makes sense.
I getcha.
Yeah.
I would have thought it was longer than that. Do you remember the first time I saw you was actually on Louise McSharry's stories, and you were performing at an event.
No More Hotels.
Yes.
Yeah, that was the one. Yeah.
And you did your granny routine.
Yes.
And I just remember just being glued to her stories going, who is this fabulous, hilarious creature? And I was like, follow. You were so cool. And again, I suppose you need to explain maybe the granny character that you sometimes roll out. I love her.
So I haven't said this to you because you're going to find this is going to be gas because you're kind of connected.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Okay.
This is interesting. So I entered Miss Burlesque Ireland in 2016. My mom saw it on Facebook, and that's when I decided. So 2015 is when I started. Nearly 8 years ago, but 2016 was the burlesque year. Anyway, I entered that as a complete newbie to the scene, just went in there. And there was three sections in the competition, and it's a lot of money to go into costumes, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, what do I already have? And I had a granny costume. And the reason why I had a granny costume is because me and my friend Louise used to dress up as grannies, not burlesque or stripping, rapping grannies called the ghetto grannies. And we used to, it was just for the crack, and we entered the All-Ireland talent show.
All right.
And isn't Grania your sister?
Yeah.
She hosted it when we did it. Yeah.
Too funny.
So that's where the granny came out of, because I literally was like, I've got a granny costume. let's see what we can do.
So you had the costume at home, and I suppose to set you apart in terms of the act, was it a good way of getting in, combining granny with burlesque?
Yeah, it was just like like there was a section where it was called unique and you could do whatever you want. And I was like, I'm just going to bring comedy into this. And I just put the tassels on my bum. And I was like, I'll just do assholes instead. And, you know, I'll just rip it off. The skirt already had Velcro on it. I was like, we're here. We're ready.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Yeah. So the Granny Boo was born.
Granny Boo.
Granny Boo. Go on.
Oh, she's fantastic. let's talk about burlesque actually while you're talking about it, because, you know, a lot of us know what it is, but maybe we don't fully understand what defines it. Mm. How would you describe it? Like, what exactly, you know, do you need to be defined as a burlesque dancer?
So, first of all, I would call it more so burlesque performer, because there's a lot of people that do burlesque and they don't necessarily dance.
Okay.
So there's like lots of styles. And I suppose it is kind of focused around the element of striptease. But even then, people don't always striptease. Do you know that way? But okay. It is kind of deeply rooted in that, like, striptease kind of reveal and all those moments in your costume pieces.
Yeah.
But it's deeply rooted in, like, comedy and parody. And I would almost say activism, definitely in this day and age, you know. And so it's storytelling in the form, in whatever your passion or talent is. That's how I feel it is. So, like, whether it's true dance or the striptease or the comedy or a bit of theatre or bringing in really cool costume reveal moments or props. And it's kind of like the jack of all trades creative outlet, which is why I love it, because I'm not really like a professional at one thing. So I can bring my dancing into it. I can bring my comedy into it, and I can bring my storytelling into it, you know?
Yes.
So I feel like the main thing for burlesque is just having the passion and and the confidence to put yourself out there. It's like sharing your energy and presence. Yeah. We'll get you on stage. Yeah.
Now that would be quite a step outside the comfort zone. Which do you know what? It's fantastic about what you do, because I know a lot of what you do is workshops and helping people get outside their comfort zones.
Yeah.
And tap into that, which is so cool. And I'd love to talk about that some more. But how do you go from, wanting to be one of the gang, one of the troupe, to I'm ready to stand on a stage and own it myself?
Yeah, it was a long process and kind of not even a consciously made one.
Okay.
You know, it was really organic. Like, I didn't just wake up and go, I'm going to do this. I actually, what I did decide to do was definitely go into performing kind of creative mode more often, because for my mental health, when I was in college and I was studying to be an accountant, and I could feel myself kind of getting depressed again, you know, when those feelings are coming in. And I went to the counsellor and she just made it really clear. It was something so easy and simple, but at the time it wasn't to me. She was like, you're not dancing anymore, because all my friends are going their separate ways. You know, it was at that time where people go in colleges and leaving the country. And I was like, God, I'm not. And I was like, I need to dance again. So I kind of went out of my way to start up a class or just to dance with friends. And then it just kind of spitballed from that, you know? And yeah, it slowly just kind of wove in, and then it just slowly became this kind of where I am now.
Yes.
You know, which is, it's been a journey.
And when was Bonnie born? You know, because I did ask you in voice notes back and forth ahead of the chat, you know, can we go there with your name, with your, you know, as I was saying, the name you were christened with.
The name was christened, Sinead. I said it.
So you're, you know, on your birth certificate is not Bonnie Boo.
No.
It is Sinead.
Gould.
Sinead Gould.
Yeah.
Does anyone call you Sinead anymore?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, my family.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. I only go by Bonnie now. Mummy. my family, but even then my nickname is Ned. So.
Right.
Yeah, so I actually have loads of names. So people in Waterford, they know me obviously from a long time. So they're not going to really call me Bonnie. But even some people have naturally switched to Bonnie without me even saying it. Some of my students have, even though they know me years as Sinead, you know. And then a lot of my good friends will call me Ned. And then
what's Ned about?
Ned, it's just short for Sinead. Ned.
Oh, right, okay.
And my friend Gillian, she'd like a really thick Thai accent, and she'd be like, Ned. And it sounded like Ned, and it just stuck. Okay. She just called me Ned years ago. But I like it. Yeah. So I would introduce myself as Ned if I wasn't in a creative space.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then I'd explain that short for Sinead, because people would look at me with this weird face being like, why is she called Ned? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when did you decide on Bonnie? Was that early doors?
Yeah. So I knew I wanted a stage name.
Yeah.
And I knew I wanted a name that was, I could like use it every day. I suppose because I'm at the time, I wasn't like, I'm only going to do burlesque, you know, as a dancer or as like, you know, even an MC. And, you know, I just thought Bonnie is a name that I can introduce myself as. But then it was actually originally Bonnie Boo Peep. Like a play on Bo Peep, and the peep obviously with the titties. So, and then I was like, it's quite long, I don't need that. And then I found out that boo in French, if you spell it B-O-U-X, is pout.
Yeah.
And then that just happened.
And it's great. I love it. I mean, obviously, I think it's a fabulous name. Yeah. Bonnie Boo. I mean.
Really? Because I look back at that now, Sheila, and I've said it recently. I was like, God, if I started now, I wouldn't have chosen that name. You know, I would have felt like I would have liked a bit more of an Irish kind of element in my name because it's French, you know?
Okay.
No offense to French people. A great country. But it's obviously it works and it's nice to hear that because I'm like, God, what did I don't really put much thought into things. I remember just being in my friend's bedroom being like, Bonnie Boo, done. Like,
yeah.
Easy as that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think it works, but I do
Thank
know
you.
What you mean because I think I see where you're coming from because I know that you're very passionate about all things the divine feminine and
yeah.
honouring Celticism and nature.
And the land here. Mm. Yeah.
So is that why you would have wanted to have
yeah.
brought it in? Okay.
To honour that. And it's a lot of that does inspire me in my art. So it
yeah.
would have been nice to, what would I have done? Like Bonnie Brogue.
Bonnie Brogue there.
Bonnie Baron. That's how I am now. From now on.
Throw in a middle name, you'd
Bonnie
be great.
Bonnie Baron. Oh my God, okay, great. Thanks. Her Irish cousin. She comes in with spuds. Hello.
So let's talk about your love of nature and your love of honouring the past.
Yeah.
If we can.
Yeah, of course.
Because I know you have been doing some really interesting creative work as well in that space. And it's something I've spoken about a bit on the podcast previously. And it's wonderful to see that things are evolving.
Yeah.
And there is a hark back to honouring the past. And
yeah.
now this is the first year that we've had a national day of celebration for Bridget, which is a wonderful thing. And
oh,
you were very much a part of those celebrations also.
Yeah. Well, I randomly was the person for the photo call. So I felt very honoured.
Mm.
I know that could have been anyone, you know, that's a media thing, I suppose. But it did have a little special place in my heart because I was so excited for that day to be now celebrated.
Mm.
You know, it was really, really nice.
You are somebody who... I'm getting the feeling is very in tune with nature and wanting to be. I mean, we are nature. It's not about being out in it. We are ourselves,
yeah.
nature. But you are immersed in it, and it's your happy place also.
Yeah,
yeah,
big time. You know, if I don't go out into nature on a very regular basis, like my life will suffer. Like, as in, I'll be anxious. I'll be like, I really need to consciously ground myself, but it's not even consciously anymore, it's just part of my life, you know. It's just like, it's just what I do. It's just like, gotta go for the swims, gotta hug a tree, gotta get my feet in the grass.
Mm.
You know, that teamed with movement is what really pulls me back in and really balances me, you know. And yeah, I just, nature is just, it's fucking beautiful. She's so sexy. I'm gonna lie all over and tumble and sniff the grass.
So when you're on stage, right, and I'm like I was the night in Vicar Street, and I'm there and I'm watching you, and I was going to say I was sitting in the chair, but actually most of us were up on our feet and we were hooping and hollering.
Yeah.
But we're watching you, and mm-hmm. it's really inspiring and it's really empowering, but I also would really struggle to see myself do what you do. And I know a big mm-hmm. part of your work is to help others feel like, well, if I can do it, so can you.
Yes.
How do you get there?
Ooh, like how do I get to a place to share that? Or how does someone get to the place that I'm...
Kind of all of it,
all
really.
Of it,
in
yeah.
the sense that how did... I suppose the first question is probably, how did you get there yourself first?
Okay, yes. Yes. You got to get there first and then...
To be able to show others
and
then lead the way.
Mm, yeah.
Did it come very naturally to you?
It did.
Great.
In lots of ways. The passion was natural. The drive was natural, you know, but it still came with its like little challenges and anxieties, but I'm really stubborn in that way. I'm not a stubborn person, but when it comes to feeling a fear or feeling like I can't do something, I immediately am like, well, now you're going to have to do it. You know, I'm very like, if that's something you want to do and you think you can't, you're now going to have to prove yourself and do it, you know. And for me, I have always been naturally sensual with my body
mm.
since I'm young.
Mm.
I've always danced with my hips and my bum and everything, which doesn't have to be sensual either, because like other cultures would twerk and it's not at all, it's a celebration. It doesn't have to be. I suppose sensual is different to sexual, though. This is the difference.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I've always moved that way with my body. And even when I was on like my hip hop crew, you know, and I love all the styles, I was always kind of like, can we just put like a little booty shake in there, you know, and can we just like do this, you know? And so naturally dancing, and it was more so dancing than burlesque at the start, you know, dancing in that way, feeling that feminine energy, and really it was natural and was there for me. And then when I realized I wanted to do burlesque, it's obviously come with like a lot of practice. You know, it was natural for me to want to get up on that stage, but it wasn't like polished or ready, you know what I mean? And even, I suppose, but what I've always had since I'm very young, and I think it goes back a lot to the support of my parents, but also like there's lots of factors as to how we, who we are and how we're shaped. I've always been very free and confident in who I am, and never felt like I had to explain that or be anything different than what I wanted to be. I suppose that's come from a young age. So when it came to burlesque, it wasn't even in my mind too out there or too scary. Do you know, it was just a form of...
Yeah, so you came from a very supportive...
Very supportive
background
family.
Where there wasn't any, which is great.
It's,
and that's what we want.
Amazing.
You know, you're parking shame because it has no place.
Yeah.
But that's not often the case either, particularly in... what has been up until now, because I know things are changing massively, but yeah. Ireland has been quite conservative.
Yes.
You know?
No, big time. And I suppose I'm lucky now, Sheila, because the spaces are there now. It was the people before me that had to fight even harder to do what I'm doing now, you know? So it's still easier. Even though it comes with its challenges, it was still a lot easier. And I knew that, like, I was really supported. I didn't have to think of my family shaming me or anything like that, you know, quite the opposite.
Great.
And but I was really scared. So the social media aspect of my work is what made me fearful. So I was totally happy to go on stage and do what I do, and it was like discovering this part of me when I started that was just like a fire. I was like, oh my god, this is coming so natural, and there's still loads of work and learning to do, but like it was just coming out of me. But when it came to having to put that onto social media, that's where I really had to work on it. And I suppose the social media is what exposes you to other people, for other people to feel inspired and to be like, I can do that too. But I was terrified of posting up sexy pictures of myself. Sounds so Irish, sexy pictures. I feel very high in my, I'm so sexy. So
yeah, I would imagine. It was, of course.
But I was fearful because I was creating all these scenarios in my head, because my anxiety used to be wicked bad, and I've gotten a right grasp on it now, thank God. And I was just creating all these scenarios and literally would be like sick to my stomach, but never enough. Well, it was hard, but still always did it. Felt the fear and did it anyway. I remember the first time I posted up a picture of me topless with my tassels on Facebook, and I shot myself. Like, oh my god, my stomach's coming out my arse. But I got to leave it up there and just do it, you know. And this is like, it's like exposure.
Yeah.
It's like I'm going to have to keep exposing myself, feeling this fear, and it'll become normal. And it became normal. And now I couldn't give. I wouldn't even say I couldn't give a shit, because I do give a shit. It's like it's nothing but positivity and. Like, I just feel so open and full and content to be out there the way I am.
Great.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify.
Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
It's pretty obvious from anyone listening that I hugely respect the work that you do, and I think you're wonderful, truly wonderful. But I have seen you sometimes, you know, say on Instagram that something you've put up, be it a reel or an image, has been taken down.
Oh, yeah.
And I get so frustrated for you.
Thanks.
Because what you're putting out there is really important. And, you know, it's, they're just not getting it.
Yeah, I don't know what the story is, if it's like, if there's an actual person doing it, or if it's just an algorithm that's scanning pictures and sees flesh. They're like, no flesh.
It makes more sense that it's probably just an algorithm.
It's probably just a flesh thing. But then it doesn't make sense, because if it was just a flesh thing, there's like huge celebrities that will put up, you know, pictures, and they don't get taken down, you know, so maybe not. Actually, there's...
They just have it in for you.
Have it in, it's just for me, yeah. If there's a lady... Blogger on the Pole, I think, is their Instagram handle, and they do a lot of work in this, and actually like they're an academic and they're a pole dancer, and they like have like direct discussions with Instagram about all this.
Oh, interesting.
Yes, but look, for now we'll just have to, what I do is I have a rule: for every arse picture I put up a few non-arse pictures, so then they're not after me as much. That's my plan.
So by pushing yourself out of your comfort zone, you know, breaking through that fear barrier all the time, you're getting more confident. Mm. And now you're at a point where you're like, hey, it's all good. So now that you're at this point, I know you've been doing it years, but because you yourself are fully empowered, you've arrived, you can then share that magic with others through your workshops.
Yeah. And I love my workshops. They're so great. And, you know, so I do so many different styles of workshops, I suppose, and sometimes I can call them dance workshops, but then compared to other dance workshops, it's not that technical, you know, because like dancing can, you know, requires a lot of training. So then but it's not quite on the complete wellness side either. So I just feel like what I do is I use movement, and particularly sensual movement, as a tool for you to feel good and to believe in yourself and to build your confidence. Mm-hmm. You know, and I just think, you know, any hobby and any outlet does that for people. But particularly with women and that sort of movement, it's so healing. And especially in Ireland, with our history of, dare I go there, you know, of the women in Ireland and how they were treated, that, you know, it's not that long ago. And, you know, I just think it's really important for people to start loving their bodies for them and moving their bodies for them and feeling it for them, you know.
I used to do a yoga class, where the teacher had trained in Qigong, and we used to do what she called the teacup dance.
Yeah.
And it was about moving your hips from side to side and then around. And it was a very deliberate movements. And then she put on music and you'd go at your own pace, but moving together. And it was men and women. It wasn't just all women, but it was very sensual. And I found it a really empowering class to
do
because of that movement that... Mm. There was some part of my brain that was saying, no, not allowed to do that.
Yeah.
But the part of you that wanted to and that allowed yourself to do it, it felt so good. It felt so good because you were just moving in tune with your body.
This is the thing, it's like the circle of life. So I imagine you were stirring the cup of tea with your hips.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. And then there were hand movements, but it was all about kind of getting that fluidity into the hips and legs and the whole body moving, rather than jerky movements. It was about keeping it smooth and soft
and flowy.
Yeah. And basically opening up the hips, and it was wonderful for flexibility.
Yeah. And, you know, we store a lot of emotion in our hips and that area. So you're like, you know, you're moving stagnant energy and you're getting your body moving. And also it's that movement is natural in everyone. Some people will be like, nah. I'm like, no, it is. It's just we've gotten removed from it, depending on your lifestyle or your environment or your culture.
And well, I mean, if anyone is at, you know, side of a pitch and they're watching, you know, training happening as well, you'll see a lot of men and women do that movement to help with their lower back.
Yeah, this is the thing.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and that's not seen as a sex. They're doing it because they need to do it to limber up and be ready for the game.
So we need to normalise, Sheila, that, you know, anywhere you are in town, outside fucking Stephen's Green, that you can just be grinding your hips
grind
yourself
your hips.
And no one's batting an eyelid.
Let's talk about the movements, because there's some key ones that we know of. And it's interesting, you touched on it. You touched on twerking and you mentioned that it's because obviously when I think of twerking, I do think of it as a sexual movement, as a fun, playful, you know, let's get down. But you're saying that its origins were not that.
Yeah. I mean, so twerking would be a newer term, and that, like, the twerking you would see a lot in music videos, you know, and bouncing the booty, and it'd be a lot of, like, from America more, you know, because it wouldn't have been here. People wouldn't have naturally twerked here 60 years ago, I'd say. You know, but twerking actually comes from an African dance. Yeah, like, all different cultures will have their style of, we won't call it twerking, we'll call it hip and booty dancing, you know, whatever it is, because there's all different names on it depending on the origin and the countries. Because, like, South America as well, like Brazilian funk dancing, you'll see them all do the hip movements as well. And so it's a dance of celebration. And in some cultures, you know, the dance can mean different things for different occasions and different, but it's like, it's a dance for everyone. So it's not, the origins aren't sexual. The origins aren't to be that way, but also it can, it's beautiful to use it in that way as well.
Okay.
But, like, you know, you'll see kids essentially doing that dance.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
Because
to express joy.
Express joy and celebrate and, you know, because it's part of their culture, and it's like a real natural movement from them. They're just born into it, you know. And that's why I think, if we're just going to focus on Irish people, that I do think that we're all capable of moving our hips like that. We just haven't really had the opportunity, because Irish dancing is, like,
rigid.
And it's beautiful. I love Irish dancing, you know. So it's just, it's years and years and years of what we're used to, you know. So I do think that hip movement is there to be unlocked in everyone.
And then, you know, old Irish dancing, you know, separate to Irish dancing, is Danza de Chanos. And that has a far more fluidity in the body.
Yes.
While it still may not be booty drops and twerking, it is a bit more fluid in the hip and in the arms as well. You do see a lot more movement. I'd love to talk about some of the key moves that perhaps we can all do while we're listening to this pod.
Oh,
if you're
yes.
out for a walk, or you're in the car, you know, well, I know you can't really move in the car, but you can.
Oh, we can make it work.
You can wiggle. Yeah, yeah. You can wiggle in the chair safely. You know, what can we do that can help us feel better and feel more connected to our bodies?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, put on a song that you love.
Yeah.
I think that's the most important thing. There's no specific music that you need. If you want to move your hips to Beethoven, like, go for it. Right, so that's number one. Put on a song you love. And I love twerking to classical music.
And really?
Then, yeah, or EastEnders. Sharon. So I suppose you were talking about the cup of tea thing earlier. I always say to my students that, you know, we've always got this imaginary, we've got a little pencil in our butt cheeks, and we're drawing that circle on the floor. You're going to bend the knees. You're going to open your legs to shoulder width, a bit wider. And you're just going to let your pelvis roll around and draw that circle on the floor. I feel like that's a good circle of life movement. And, you know, when people are like, I can't twerk, I'm like, if you can thrust, you can twerk, because it's the same pelvic movement, but you're just bringing your arse up and back the way instead of your crotch forward. You know, everyone has the thrusting thing, I'm telling you, you know, everyone thrusts. And so, yeah, I think practicing your reverse thrusts, because I'm not there to show people properly now, and getting those circle of life's going, and figure eights. Do you ever do the figure eight through your hips as well?
Yeah.
Which would be using belly dancing and loads of different, like the infinity.
Yeah, it feels so good.
Feels amazing.
Yeah.
It feels amazing. Just letting yourself go to one of your favorite songs. If you could do one song every day and move your hips in that way, you're going to really do good things for yourself.
So separate to dance, to burlesque, to workshops, you actually have fingers in a fair few pies, don't you?
We do, yeah.
You do a lot.
Yeah.
So I know clothing and clothing lines and all of that, but I'd love to talk about being a wedding celebrant.
Yeah.
Is that a recent thing?
During COVID.
Fabulous.
I started, yeah. I've done a good few weddings there, but I actually started an organisation called Entheos Ireland only last September. I'm finished training with them now in May, and I'm a legal solemniser with that organisation, which is amazing. and their ethos is like inclusivity and all of the faiths and no faiths and whatever your wedding is to you. It's just about love. So it's really, really nice to be able to like have no limits on what sort of ceremony people might want, you know, because it's all so individual to the partners. So it's great.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
What drew you to doing that?
Few things. One of the things is, and I will start with this, and people be like, to start with this is because of course you got to enjoy something, and I knew I'd enjoy it. But I'm really kind of like logistical and kind of like, right, practical with things. And I'm always constantly thinking of what can I do to add on to what I already do that all kind of works together.
Mm.
And I'm all about being time rich. You know, what sort of jobs can I do that are condensed down and it's not a 10-hour day, you know?
Yeah,
and
great.
The wedding celebrant industry, like, it's amazing because you're still self-employed. I get to pick my hours. I'm working with people, I'm public speaking, I'm writing, I'm, you know, just dealing with good energy. Everyone's happy getting married. It's just such a positive, lovely space. It's an emotional space as well, but I'm here for that. And so it just seemed right. And, you know, I was like, what skills do I have? And I just felt like I had, obviously still loads to learn always, but I had the skills that it takes to be a wedding celebrant.
Yeah, of course.
With the work I already do.
Yeah, because you're confident. You can stand up in front of people. You're not going to get, you know, that kind of stage fright that others might get because they wouldn't be used to it. So,
but it still is terrifying though.
Is it?
Do you know what? When I got up to my first wedding, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm doing this. I'm more nervous doing a wedding ceremony than I would be standing on Vicar Street stage.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. If I had right now was able to choose what one, I would for nervous reasons, I would choose the stage. I'd choose the stage for passion reasons as well, to be fair. But
yeah,
but yeah, it's a good job going forward that doesn't use my body as well, because I have like fibromyalgia and like hypermobility issues, and so I really need to think of my future as well, what I can do that still allows me to be who I am. Celebrates when, you know, I don't have to be someone I'm not. I'm still self-employed, but it doesn't use my body. So that was another reason.
Mm. You're after opening up something big now. Before we get to that, I just wanted to ask, because you seem so extroverted, obviously, when you're on stage like that night.
Yeah.
You know, at the you know, in Vicar Street, you are, you know, bigger than big in terms of your personality is booming. Is it because when you're a wedding celebrant, you're more Sinead than you are Bonnie? So is it, you know what I mean?
Mm.
So as a result, is it a bit more exposing? Like, what I'm trying to say is, are you more introverted when you're not, you know, pulling on the mask of Bonnie, as it were?
Yeah. So I would be very intro and extroverted depending on how I feel, my environment and kind of what I'm doing. I feel like I'm a mixture of both, but I'm a lot more introverted than people realize. Because obviously, if you only see one side of someone, you know, what I do is very out there, you know. But I think there's a difference between confidence and then being extroverted, you know. And like, I'm really confident and enjoy what I do, but doesn't mean that I want to be that extra all the time.
Mm.
You know, that's like, you know, I don't walk into a room and want everyone to look at me because I've walked into a room. Like on stage, that's my place where we've made that agreement that you're watching me now, you know. And I suppose with the wedding ceremonies, you're there for the couple, you're not there for you. So what I mean by that is, it's not about me when I'm marrying someone.
Yeah.
It's about them.
Yeah.
And because it's about them, I think the nervousness is coming from a place of really caring, because I need to make sure that they have a great ceremony.
Mm.
You know, they haven't bought tickets to come to my show and know what they're going to get. They've booked me to do a job, and I want to make sure, because it's a really special day for them, that they get that day.
Yeah.
And that's not about highlighting or putting a spotlight on me. It's about doing it in a way that I get my energy across, but I don't take over, because it's not, I'm not on stage. But you are, but you're not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, so there's a lot more, I think, mindfulness. Mm. That goes into that. And then I'm not Bonnie, and I know that, you know, like, God, I could do with a clap right now. Sure, I'll just shake my bum. Like, you can't do that at a wedding. Like,
yeah.
Not that you want to be clapped at either, but you know, it's about reading a room, and you want to make sure everyone's feeling good and really just, you want people to feel at home, you know?
Yes.
Which I love doing. Mm. But yeah, so you've got to be a lot more mindful of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure. So you mentioned fibromyalgia, and, you know, dealing with chronic condition or conditions in your case. So can we talk about that and how that impacts you in terms of your day-to-day living?
Yeah. So I know we touched on it earlier and then I didn't delve into this at the time, but getting kind of diagnosed with this is kind of what did bring me to where I am now, because I was living in England and I was just really ill and like signed off work. And, you know, I've kind of been just really sick since I'm a teenager, to be honest. It's just become a real part of my life, with irritable bowel syndrome as well, which I totally make a joke of and it's all good. But like, it was really bad. Like, do you know what I mean? It was like, going to bring my diarrhea tablets with me, you know, like it's good and I can laugh about it and I always have, which is great. But all of that is obviously was flared up from an undiagnosed condition as well. And then not eating the right foods because you didn't know you had what you had. And the knowledge wasn't there when you're younger.
Yeah.
You know, like we've so much knowledge at our fingertips now that you can really like zone in on what you need, you know? So I suppose I did suffer for a long, long time just due to ignorance and lack of understanding and a lot of gaslighting, to be honest with you, with medical professionals, which everyone was probably experienced at some stage. And when I had to move back home because I was living in Brighton and I was too sick to work a full-time job, and I remember just having debilitating headaches, like so bad, and chronic fatigue, like so bad. And I still do suffer with the fatigue to this day. It's one of my hardest things. And I started a weekly dance class purely because I was like, I need to kind of do something and I need a bit of structure in my week. And I need, it's just something for me. And, you know, and that's when I got back into teaching. And that was, I think, 2 years before I became Bonnie Boo. Yeah. So like I planned to move back to England, or I actually planned to go around Europe busking. I remember like, I'm going to go busking around. I'm going to be a belly dancing leprechaun. I was just I was just thinking of all the things I could do. And but I ran away for years thinking that I was anxious and down because of where I lived. And actually it wasn't where I lived. It was the home within me that felt like that. So when I was forced to come back because I wasn't well, I faced a lot of stuff and found happiness where I lived, which has been like life changing for me. And it's really opened my eyes to like, a lot of the time you run away from the problem, but you are the problem. And I was my own problem. Physically, it wasn't my fault, but then that came with its mental challenges and emotional challenges, which it's understanding why I felt certain ways, but also I was the only person that could change that, you know? So I was like faced with a lot in terms of like my anxiety and what I can do, and victimizing myself then when I was sick and thinking, why me? And I think everyone has that journey of when you get diagnosed with something, it's like acceptance is the biggest thing to go forward. So it took me a long time, but it was through my art form and being creative that I accepted it. And when I accepted it, I could like start to get control over it. And I'm not as sick at all anymore. Brilliant. Like I am, I have to work really hard to be the way I am with my health, you know, mindfully, like exercise wise, rest wise. Like I can't do an all nighter party with people. They'll be tired the next day. I'll probably get really sick the next week because my immune system will suffer. Do you know? So I've had to make a lot of decisions and a lot of discipline in myself, but it actually suits my personality because I don't want to go out and party all night. I want to get up and go for a swim in the morning. You know, and that's what brought me to this. So I had to like redesign my whole lifestyle and how I see things and how I enjoy life, I suppose. And then, that's kind of,
And I'm so glad for you that, you know, for you, movement, dance, performance has actually been a huge part of your healing journey.
Yeah, big time. Which is why I use that tagline, dance yourself free, because that's what it did for me. But then it's funny because it equally causes me a lot of pain as well.
Okay.
So
can I ask again? Because actually for those listening, and like I do know somebody who has fibromyalgia, but for those listening who might be going, what does that actually mean? Because that's what's tricky about it as a condition. It kind of covers a wide area.
It's very broad and it's very individual to each person.
It can manifest so differently,
It's like, you know, and there's so many symptoms, and then one symptom can be huge for one person and not for the other, you know. For me, it's the fatigue is is the hardest thing. And but like, it's, I still have it, but I can manage it more. Like there was times where I would just, I'd be so tired that I wouldn't want to get up for my flight in the morning to go on holidays because it's too painful to wake up because I'm too tired. Whereas other people would be like, I'm going on holidays, I'll be up at 3. And I knew then, I remember, I was like, I'm not normal. Like, what's wrong with me?
Okay.
Like, I actually want to cry because I'm so tired.
Right.
You know? Getting emotional now.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it. I get it.
And it's like, I wasn't doing anything to be tired.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no. So that's actually making...
Yeah, no, take your time. It is, it is.
Yeah. So I remember, like, stuff like that and just not being as... I always felt a bit different, and I know everyone probably does. I don't mean different in a cool way, but just being like, why can't I do what everyone's doing? I would, like, have to, like I said, if I did something physically, I'd suffer for afterwards and other people, you know, just those things. And I was doing all the right things and I wasn't drinking. Like, obviously I did drink when I was younger, but not even to the same amount other people were doing. I barely drink now. I don't smoke. I don't, you know, but pain, I suppose, like joint pain and muscle pain, headaches, and inflammation stuff comes a lot. So like, you know, I had plantar fasciitis a lot. I'll get tennis elbow and like, wrists, like loads of things, but I've got hypermobility stuff going on. I'm going to see an EDS specialist now this year, Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, and to hopefully get some answers. And I got told by my physio before, being like, because I would come into them and I'd be in so much pain, and it's because my joints go a bit further than the natural range, say.
Right,
so then you're
okay.
Like, you're just injuring yourself. I tore my tendon in my hamstring last year, like, by accident. Do you know?
Right.
So, and they were like, what, you know, maybe you should reconsider dancing. I'll never forget when they said it to me. You should reconsider dancing full time because, you know, your joints. And I was, I remember just being like, oh God. And it's funny because even though I knew what she was saying was true to an extent, I didn't take it on board and I continued. But I suppose I just need to be really careful. There's a fine line. It's kind of like, here's the spectrum. Here's no movement and here's lots of movement. And my body needs to be in a controlled area here.
Mm, okay.
So my medicine is the gym, because you need to strengthen your joints to stop them from hurting so much. And like, my pelvis moves a lot and I need to get readjusted all the time by the chiropractor and stuff like that all the time. And my chiropractor, John, is my friend, so I'm very lucky.
Mm.
But
And this is the side of things that we don't see.
Yeah.
So when you're performing, whether we're watching a video online or we're seeing a live performance of yours,
yeah,
we're just seeing the polished you in your look, your outfit, whatever it is, looking amazing, performing brilliantly. But we don't see, it's like that image before of the ballerina's feet. You know, that was an amazing one about what we don't see.
Mm.
And that is so true, particularly for the life of a performer, of a dancer.
Yeah. And I mean, everyone has something going on in their life. Do you know what I mean? They do.
But you have the added layer then of the conditions that you're trying to manage also.
With such a physical job.
Yeah. A physical job and something that is... you're deeply passionate about.
Yeah.
So them saying to you, you know, why don't you give up the dancing kind of thing, that must feel like just an impossibility. Who are you without dance?
Yeah, I don't know, because it's saved me so many times and continues to. And, you know, when I'm dancing, it's kind of only it's one of the rare times where my mind quietens down.
Okay.
So even on
Is it your meditation?
Yes, exactly. So even on a mental health level alone, it quietens my mind, because you don't have time to think when you're like dancing and moving to the music, you know. And you know, and I find it hard, and then to like do a still meditation, like to sit down. And then I used to kind of beat myself up a bit, but I'm not going to do that anymore, because I feel like we all need to accept and learn what works for us. And just because, like, years ago, for example, I remember thinking running, you know, if you want to be fit, you got to run, because that's what people, you know, there's so many ways to be fit and different types of exercises. And, you know, you need to find what works for you. And so for me, movement meditation works. What I'll do is I'll get on the floor with some yoga mats, headphones on, and I'll blast like Ludovico Einaudi or like Mozart. But I love classical music, and I'll do really slow, intuitive movements. Like, I mean, if anyone walked in, I'm just like... in this like glass case of emotion, like rolling on the floor and breathing. And that's my meditation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
Anything that allows your mind to quieten and for you to be able to focus on your breath for a moment is magical. And yeah, it could be anything.
Yeah.
Absolutely anything, you know? Yeah. And I think it's really important that everyone finds that one thing. If you can move your body and just literally get out to some green area, you're doing well.
You're doing well.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Bonnie, thank you so much for being here. It's been a brilliant chat. It was so lovely to meet you in person.
I know, you too.
I can't wait to see you perform live again because it was such an experience. Oh. And I would urge anyone listening, if you, you know, find an event that she's performing at, make sure you get a ticket because it is something wonderful to behold. Really is. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You're a star, honestly.
You can catch Bonnie as part of Jenny Keane's tour in September, and her own show happening in Waterford next year on Valentine's Day is one not to be missed. Just go to her Instagram page for more information and subscribe to her mailing list to never miss her events. Thank you so much for listening to Ready to Be Real.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.